Hello and welcome to a special show for the Pick 6 carryover at Aqueduct on Thursday, December 2nd. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker. Once again, feeling, I'm not going to lie, somewhat out of it today after the red-eye flight back in from San Diego last night. Looking forward to heading to the SBC conference in the Meadowlands tomorrow, and then it's off to Gulfstream. No rest whatsoever, but obviously this Pick 6 carryover came up, and I'm very pleased to have our friends from Naira/NairaBets sponsoring it. We'll obviously be playing the sequence while at the conference and hopefully making a little bit of money. And to help me go over the sequence, bring in one of the people whose opinion I always want to hear when it comes to all things regarding New York racing, and somebody I'll get to see at the Tucson conference, speaking of conferences, next week, who did a fantastic job subbing for me on the late week show last week. And he's back here once again from InTheMoneyPodcast.com. He's Nick Tamaro. Nick, how are things?
I'm doing great, Pete. Good to be with you. Glad to have gotten through the show without too many issues last week. And luckily, I think it worked out pretty well. So always exciting to be talking about a carryover. And it feels like we do this a lot in advance of the first day of the racing week. So it's very convenient for the carryovers to take place on Sundays.
Yeah, it's a lot better. You know, the Saturday into Sunday carryover can get lost just because, you know, there's so much else going on. But when it's Sunday into Thursday, it gives fans a long time to look at these races and come up with a plan. Hopefully, we can take this thing down. We start off in race number 4 with a two-year-old filly allowance race going 7 furlongs on the dirt. We're going to have a very, very big favorite in here. Nick, are you with her or against her?
You know, I wish there was an alternative, but I think you kind of have to be with her. And given the way the rest of the sequence shakes out, it really does feel like Radio Days, as who we're talking about, is going to be pretty tough to beat. The day that she debuted, the track was sloppy. There was really no track profile that was notable in terms of whether you wanted to be outside or inside. But she scored what I would say was probably a workmanlike victory that's maybe a little bit better than the running line suggests. I don't know necessarily if the time is exactly right, because if so, then they really flew home. I think that Craig Mulkowski feels similarly, because there are no time form U.S. fractions for that race. So, or fractional, I should say, pace figures. So if she did what she was supposed to do, she looks like a horse with some upside, and she's really facing a weak field. I think that's what ultimately led me to the conclusion that she's going to be pretty tough to beat, because there's just not very much in here in terms of competition.
I tend to agree. Looks basically nailed on. Even if that figure is a little fast, there's plenty of leeway. And then, of course, there's the idea that this one, given the hands that she's in, is supposed to improve with that start under her belt. Doesn't need to improve to win it, but probably will. Cost $750,000. The dam, 3 winners from 3 starters. Gunrunner needs no introduction. Radio Days looks very, very tough. I was thinking of just Stone Cold Signaling and maybe coming back in a pick 5 if it goes wrong. Did you have any you wanted to nominate as backups at the B or C level?
I could see maybe using Boss Lady Kim as a C. I don't think anybody else, potentially Waterworks as a C. I don't think I could go anywhere beyond that. I don't even really know if I'd spend money on those. I think it's a Stone Cold one number. And if for some reason there's a big upset here, then you come back in the pick 5. I think you can, you really would just be sort of throwing good money after bad by looking to go anywhere else.
Gotcha. I will put those as, you know, C with a question mark. In other words, if you're looking for something creative, that those would be the ideas. But for us, very likely to be 95% or more through Radio Days to get things kicked off. Let's move to race number 5. More two-year-olds. We've got New York bred colts this time at the maiden special weight level, going 6 furlongs on the turf. I do think we're going to be on the turf. There is a little rain in the forecast tonight, but then we've got clear-looking sailing Wednesday and Thursday. So I was optimistic. I only handicap for turf. If it does end up coming off, we can always tweet out some thoughts on the day, but hopefully that will not be necessary. There were a few different ways to go in here. I put number 9, My Friend Duke, as my top pick. Caught money on debut for a donk firster, and I thought ran well, despite having some trouble and looking to be figuring things out late. Supposed to improve and quite dangerous if he does. The 10 Red Fortress is a Linda Rice second-time starter. That is her horses also who typically improve. I thought ran pretty well after not breaking. And then just sort of master the obvious, I was going to use the backups that it looks like the five Sandrone and the seven Buck or Two. They just fit so logically on figures and form. I was going to keep them both in the mix. 9 and 10 on the A line, 5, 7 on the B line for me. Nick, how do you see it?
Yeah, I don't have anything particularly clever to add to that. I preferred Red Fortress, but I thought my friend Duke also was very dangerous. If you're watching the replay of that debut, one of the things that you can't help but be a little bit taken by is that the top three finishers, the winner wired the field, and then the second and third place finishers, Buck or Two and Sandrone, who both come back here, sort of traded positions at one point, and that was it. So it was the proverbial merry-go-round, and my friend Duke lingered behind and made a relatively decent late move. I thought Jose Ortiz was giving him a bit more of an educational type of trip, and knowing a bit about Dave Donk, I'm sure he explained to Jose beforehand that this was a gelding who may have needed a race. He did get a pretty significant amount of support on debut. It is not, looking at the respective prices of these horses, Buck or Two went off 9-2. Sandrone went off the 3-1 favorite. My friend Duke went off 6-1 in a 12-horse race. So there was definitely some expectation that he was going to run well on debut. Also worth noting that the workout reports that were available for much of the Belmont meet are not available anymore. So you can gather that, word was around that this horse was training forwardly, definitely bred very well for the turf. Red Fortress is just my kind of horse, a Linda Rice trainee that didn't take a great deal of money on debut, went off 14-1. That was a big field as well. I got out of the gate poorly, and this was just the classic, let's show them how to get around there. Linda's 20% with second time starting turf, maiden special weight runners, good for a 230 ROI. I thought the horse that was going to take money that you probably wanted to be against was Sandrone, who really had the run of the race two starts back, and then last time was bad. He really weakened late. I wanted to give him a little bit of an excuse for being outside and the rail being a bit better early on in the Aqueduct fall meet, but I don't have much of an excuse for his performance. I thought he ran poorly. The only other horse that I was going to use that you didn't mention is Built to Last, four for Tom Morley, now in Tom Morley's care after debuting from Mark Cassie. Progeny of Freuder, 12% in turf sprints. The second dam was a two-time turf winner. There's not a whole lot of turf pedigree, but Morley's been on such an unbelievable run going back to the end of Saratoga. This is a horse that it also feels like is going to be ridden with intent out of the gate. And, a late autumn turf course can often be pretty favorable to front running types. So Built to Last was a horse that I was going to use. I was going to use the 4, 9, 10 as A's and the 5 and 7 as backups, figuring the Buck or Two and Sandrone. Even though they've only gone to the post three times, I'm getting a little tired of each of them.
Yeah, I understand. I think that's an interesting case on Built to Last coming back quick, and certainly the pedigree that looks like the green should be in the future, very logically speaking there. So yeah, 10, I'm going to write it down, 10, 9, and 4 on your top line, 7 and 5 on your back line. You happy enough with that?
Absolutely.
All right, good stuff for race number 5. Let's talk about race number 6. We've got 3 and up filly and mares at the starter allowance level, going 6.5 on the dirt in a race that Timeform US suggests could favor horses on or near the lead. Nick, let's keep it with you.
This is a tough race. It looks very competitive. I settled on Big Al's Gal, looking to make it 2 straight off the claim by Rob Attriss, who definitely beat up on a weak field last time, but boy, she did it the right way. I mean, she really just stole the race out from under them around the turn and powered clear to win by a really comfortable margin. And the actress's barn has been on fire for quite some time. So I'm pretty confident she's going to come back with a big effort. She's drawn very favorably on the outside as well. So I thought she was the easiest to trust. She's always had pretty decent dirt form. And the fact that she put it all together that way last time, I thought was very encouraging. Cadeau de Pay is the other horse that I want to use in some kind of prominent fashion. I read Ortiz is staying on board for Pat Reynolds. This one was inside much of the way last time behind a wire-to-wire winner. The pace was pretty hot. She was a little bit closer than she had been in some prior starts. I think settling and making one run is really more of her game. And I think the setup will be there with Moonrock likely to go out and make the pace, and the Goddess of Snakes potentially being forwardly placed as well. I know Timeform US has it relatively slow, but I think it'll be honest enough. The other horse that I would use more as a backup is Chloe Rose, who was victorious off a claim by Gustavo Rodriguez, who, of course, is Rudy Rodriguez's brother and a former assistant. And he's actually done pretty well going out on his own with 5 wins just in the last few months. So those were the main 3 for me. I have all three of them as A's. I'll use Rosie's Peach as a backup. I think it's just an opportunity where you take the ones that look relatively obvious.
So I missed your third runner on the A line, 7-6 and?
2, Chloe Rose.
Right. 7-6. That's right. I in my mind conflated Chloe Rose and Rosie's Peach. That's what threw me off. I wrote down 8 twice. Not that that won't work. I guess I was taking the time form pace designation a little bit more. I mean, seriously than you did in the end. And I actually put Moonrock on top based on that. Just off the thought of this is a horse that's run well twice, switches to a barn that does well off the claim, and I thought should get a very good trip on or near the lead. I also had Rosie's Peach on the A line as an improving late season 3-year-old who I also thought would get a great trip going out for a new barn that has success with new acquisitions. And then the two that you mentioned is your ace Cato Depe and Big Al's Gal. I wanted to list it on the B line. Do you have something against Moonrock in this spot?
I'm generally a little too critical of you know, mid-Atlantic shippers. And I know it was for a different barn. This guy's very good off the claim, but Miguel Vera has won races in New York and is a pretty solid trainer. This horse's debut was just way too slow to me. I don't know. Yeah. I think she's going to have to run a lot better. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I'll sort of let dictate what I'm going to do is if they even end up running, because, you know, he named an out-of-town jockey. So this could have been just a, you know, let's see what the field looks like and decide whether we want to go. I also felt like, and I know Rosario's not the most encouraging rider to have on this kind of horse, but I felt like the Goddess of Snakes would push her a little bit. And the other thing to me was Big Al's Gal probably not going to be that far back. I mean, if you're using Timeform US pace figures, then Big Al's Gal, you know, went a 110 and a 101 last time out, and Moonrock in the debut, you know, went a 92 and a 94 on the dirt. So she shouldn't be that far back. I felt like that would probably be just a little bit too much. Now, this has cost me, I will admit, because, you know, let's be honest, dirt racing in New York is not as much of a focus for the April through December portion of the year. And out-of-town dirt horses are definitely better than they were before. So, you know, I would never fault anybody for wanting to try Moonrock. I just think she might be a little bit less.
I think I'll probably leave the 4 and the 8 as A's and maybe upgrade the 6 and the 7 and try to work your 2 in there as well. Probably play it a little bit more evenly than I'm going to have it drawn out in the official reckoning of the race based on our conversation. Because I do think that there are some reasons for it to heat up. And when Rosario decides that he wants to go to the front, he can keep him going a little bit longer, and that could make it a little tricky on Moonrock. So I'm going to be pretty spready in there in race number 6. Let's move on to race number 7, where we've got 3 and up, $35,000 claimers going a mile and a 16th on the turf this time around. And what did I want to do in this race? I think I want to spread is what I want to do in this race again, because it's tricky. I'll be curious to get your thought. I had a couple horses that I thought might be worth including on some tickets that could be prices. Frontman, I thought, was a little bit interesting. Getting back onto what is probably the right surface and has competitive turf figures at a level and against fields from earlier this year that I thought would be competitive. I was surprised to see 10-1 on the morning line for this gelding. I know just 2 for 24 lifetime, nothing to get the blood pumping, but one I wanted to include in a spread. Girl Dad, another one I thought made sense. Dropping made what I thought was probably a move into a hot pace last time out and could potentially go better here. Reckless Spirit, the 7, I definitely wanted to have on tickets. Strong enough on numbers. Flow Move Up coming out of the last. Alley-Oop Johnny, I liked. Presumably going to get a good trip on or near the lead. Should appreciate the drop. And then the Purple and Black, Ario, I thought had a live look. Tactical speed, overall ability, progressive runner. Yeah, I don't have much opinion. I was going to mess around with a bunch of numbers. 9, 11, 7, 2, and 6 is what I wrote down. I'll maybe grade them into A's and B's based on your reckoning of this race, which obviously has left me a little bit confused, Nick.
It's a tricky race, and there are a lot of things going on. You know, starting with Alley-Oop Johnny ran 2 races with Eric Cancel between his June effort at Belmont and his July effort at Saratoga that, I mean, if he duplicates either of those, there's a 0% chance that he'll lose. But right. You also have to worry about Ario, and you have to worry about the time away, and now he's in for a tag, and yeah, he'd been in for a tag before, but, you know, you don't lose a one other than at Saratoga by a Zop, and then plan on coming back and running for a tag at Aqueduct. So it's obviously a turf horse that Bruce Brown doesn't need to ask his owner to pay for the next 4 months. But the optics aren't great about, you know, him running in this kind of spot. I suppose you could make the argument that when push comes to shove, he's probably worth $35,000. But, you know, without being tangential about it, I think he might have a little bit of a problem with Ario, as I said, a little bit with Loaded Joe as well. I like Reckless Spirit. I'm comfortable getting a little bullish with Reckless Spirit, not too crazy, but he was squarely against the grain of the race last time. I mean, he was as much against it in terms of the race flow as you could possibly be, which you mentioned. He was lingering behind an exceptionally slow pace that really held together amazingly well, and the field kind of bunched up right at the finish. And, you know, while I'm generally loath to take horses out of those kinds of races, at least in terms of how they look visually, I want the ones that were up against it in terms of what happened. And that to me is Reckless Spirit by far. He fits this condition obviously quite well. And I think he'll get a much, much kinder pace setup this time around. I agree with you on Front Man that the morning line seems a little bit high. I think Reckless Spirit should be a shorter price than Front Man, but I don't know if 6-1 and 10-1 is necessarily exactly right. I wouldn't use them equally, but I would definitely use Front Man more as a backup. I'm mainly going to use the 2 and 7 as A's. I'll probably sprinkle in a little bit of the 9 more as a backup, as I said. I have the 6 and 11 each in the mix, REO and Girl Dad. Girl Dad faced better horses last time, really didn't do a hell of a lot of running, but I think this is a more realistic spot, and this probably is a horse that, when push comes to shove, is a claimer. So I think things will be a little bit easier this time around. So definitely a tricky race, but I think one where if I can maximize my opinion on Reckless Spirit, then it might help just to continue to get us through this really tricky sequence.
Yeah, you might be able to build some equity and maybe having a few more combinations on Alley-Oop Johnny just based on the price that one will be. If I'm going to use 5, I don't want to necessarily lose a ton of equity if Alley-Oop Johnny wins. It is interesting that we both mentioned 5 numbers and they were the same 5 numbers in this race. Just going to be a question of how to write the tickets so that we're not overspread in the middle of the sequence, which will continue with a 3 and up allowance race that goes as race number 8 at 3:44 Eastern, a 1/16 on the turf for this one. Who did you come up with in here, Nick?
You know what? I realized I did a lot of handicapping on this race. I watched a lot of replays. I went through horse by horse, and I realized that I actually hate all of them, which I'm not that surprised by. And I ended up going to a horse that I had really wanted to take a stand against in a couple of prior efforts. And it was Space Launch, who last year, you know, showed some ability on debut, went off kind of a ridiculous favorite in the Awad, though he wasn't a short price. He really didn't deserve to be favored in there. And he came back and was very dull in the race at Belmont behind Safe Conduct. He got a lot of money at Saratoga and ran poorly that day. I think that he's run 2 better races in his last 2 starts than a lot of people are going to realize. The other thing is that I think King Cause is a way better horse than anybody in this field. So the fact that he chased him home last time, while a little bit wide much of the way, is enough for me to take the plunge. And, I mean, horse by horse, I can just come up with a number of knocks on all of them. Lonesome Fugitive was all over the inside last time out at Saratoga. That was 4-star day week where you wanted to be on the hedge. Public Information is back in 11 days off a win against Lesser. Mike Maker, 2nd off the claim, exiting wins on the turf. 3 for 34 with a 42-cent ROI. Advise and Consent sat a perfect trip in a merry-go-round race. Is going to be overbet because of the connections, and the 2-3 finishers came back and ran 1-2. I have to tell you, Caveat Emptor's hang last time at Keeneland was Hall of Fame caliber. I mean, he looked like he was 1-10 at the 8th pole and somehow couldn't get to War Machine, who came back and went off 4-1 in a turf sprint at Fairgrounds and will finish any second now. So High Tide is cheap. I don't get Carruthers. I wanted to make Dancing with the Stars, who, again, was a little bit wide early in the Aqueduct fall meet, but he did have a perfect run-through on the inside early, kind of flattened out late, and I'm beginning to wonder if those 2 Saratoga races were just an aberration. I'm going to use him. I don't have I guess with all the knocks that I have in the race, the ones that I have on him are not necessarily as severe, but you can see I'm kind of a curmudgeon when it comes to this race. I really don't like anybody. I wrote ugly on the bottom of my TP. I'm gonna use Space Launch and Danzig with the Stars primarily, and I'll back up with the 6 and 7.
All right, that's fair. A very funny reckoning of this one. I ended up putting Caveat Emptor on top, despite what happened last time. I was just thinking against this group today, might end up getting the best trip on or near the lead, and I think could be, you know, maybe a little bit better than should be price for an underrated trainer in Jimmy Toner. I'm a little bit interested in that one. I'm with you with Dancing with the Stars. I just thought at the end of the day, looked a bit overpriced against these at 8-1, and it has the little condition angle as well of being second time off the long layoff. Lonesome Fugitive, I just thought looked strong enough based on closing sectionals to use. And if the race flow doesn't end up being what Time Form says and favoring runners on or near the lead, but if they end up, and you know, it might not be that likely in a New York Turf race that they go faster than it looks like on paper, I did think Lonesome Fugitive could benefit under those circumstances. And I do see your case on Space Launch for sure, and I'll be backing up there as well. So I'm going to play this one with the 2 and the 4 as B's and try to get the 7 and 10 in on the A line and see if we can make any magic happen as far as that goes in this race. That is, it's tricky. It's another tricky one in the sequence. And the more I look at it, the more I realize that it probably is going to be 100% of the money in this first leg going through Radio Days, and probably going to be pressing in that second leg, the 9 and the 10, just to be able to afford to cover some of these horses that we've talked about as the sequence moves along. The sequence that closes with 2-year-old Maidens going a mile and an eighth, interesting distance in our nightcap. Very curious, Nick, to hear how you think we're going to get paid.
Yeah, I saw this on the overnight and was like, well, that's cool. You know, we generally don't get mile and an eighth, 2-year-old races this early. We did used to get that sort of random late meet Saratoga one that actually was won by some pretty nice horses over the years. I believe Commissioner won it. There was definitely another Enforceable one of them too, went on to be a graded stake winner. And look, I mean, authorizes the horse to be, there's no question about it, but I will say, and I kind of felt this way, everybody was going through their own Breeders' Cup hangover, but the main track at Belmont on closing day was a very good inside. And this race was pretty much there was another 2-year-old race earlier on the card that was won by a Christophe Clement trainee who's the horse's name was Papza something. I know that I don't remember the last part of it, but that horse came right up the rail. And the winner of the race that Authorized is coming out of came right up the rail. And the natural winner wired. I mean, it was a very good rail. And I say that mainly because the rail at Belmont, other than the first, you know, 6 racing days or so, really wasn't a decided advantage at any point during the meet. So with that said, I think you downgrade Authorized a little bit and you upgrade both Citizen Mac and Dunton Row. And I'm going to use those 3. I don't necessarily want to grade them differently. I'd want to use them equally. I do think Authorized potentially has a big edge being drawn inside. I had completely forgotten that his damn sign was a really nice Claiborne horse that won the Pocahontas in her second career start by 4 lengths after breaking her maiden on debut and then just didn't pan out for Al Stahl. Came back and ran once at the Fairgrounds as a 3-year-old and never ran again. The rest of these horses just don't look like much. Dr. Levy is a horse who probably will get better with distance, but he's 25-1 in a 6-horse race. You know, with all due respect to Jorge Vargas, I know most of the riders were at the Breeders' Cup, but I don't think Todd Fletcher was putting Jorge Vargas on a primo 2-year-old. He also had another 2-year-old in the race who ended up running poorly. Vodka Mardini is a horse I wanted to be good because I really liked his damn Hot City Girl. He just doesn't look like he's any good. So, you know, I don't have much beyond that that's insightful. I would not be surprised if a lot of people end up gravitating towards Authorized pretty heavily and single him because of the strength of his debut. And I think there's plenty of argument to be made for that. I just want to take my track profile theory on Guns N' Roses and Citizen Mac and try, both of whom are in the hands of trainers who really should get these horses to improve with a little bit of experience too.
Yeah, that's a great point with McGahey and Clement. They both have obviously Clement has the strong record first out, but then it significantly jumps up with the second start. And then McGahey, everybody knows how that rolls. I did put Authorized on top, and I guess I agree with everything you said about the track. I just felt like the pace figures were fast enough, and then also the pedigree is strong enough for the mile and the eighth that I think, well, probably isn't going to be like the exciting value of the race, is definitely a horse who I was comfortable enough saying was a likely enough winner that I was okay pressing. And yeah, I'm definitely with you on Gunton Row and Citizen Mac, both of whom I had listed next. Gunton Row did catch some money, very wide trip there. The blinkers go on, the distance should suit. We talked about the condition angle as well. Citizen Mac almost has to keep improving for Shug. Another that should just be suited by the mile in the eighth. I was going to leave Dr. Levy in as a backup if I can afford to do so. My theory was maybe the 25-1 was also a case of it being like that the horse was clearly just out for a stroll. And the horse ran. I just thought the horse ran okay. I mean, I just like the way the horse finished up, adding blinkers, stretching out. This isn't the first pedigree I would have said, oh, should be a mile and an eighth. But just given the hands he's in, I'd like to leave him on side. Definitely more of a backup on Dr. Levy. Definitely with you on the 2, 9, and 5. And if we want to, get a little bit of juice in the price, it certainly would be better for the 9 and the 5. But I respect Authorize a little bit too much to do any kind of fade, and will list as my official top pick. Any other thoughts, Nick, on this pick six sequence, or anything else going on in the racing world?
No, I thought it was a fun sequence. You know, we've definitely seen a slew of super competitive racing. Everybody out there is probably tired of hearing me say it about the Aqueduct Fall Meet. You know, hopefully, even with turf season ending relatively soon, we'll see some of these dirt horses stick around. And you know, it's going to be a different winter too, with some of the big guns in the jockey colony staying. The Jose Ortiz is staying, Javier Castellano is staying. So Jose Lascano, of course, last winter was hurt much of the meet. So I think if all these guys are in the mix, it should make for some really, really fun and competitive racing. I'm also looking forward to the Cigar Mile, which I think as of right now has a projected field of 8. But they look like a really evenly matched, fun group. And I think that'll be a nice little centerpiece to an underrated weekend between the Cigar Mile and, of course, the Claiming Crown.
I love it, man. And we look forward to reading your full analysis of that card over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. I'm going to be down at Gulfstream. We're launching our new podcast series with them. Tons of good stuff happening in the world of racing here as we turn the calendar to December, and should be plenty of fun content coming up on InTheMoneyPodcast.com. And if you follow us on iTunes or over on our YouTube channel, we encourage you to rate, review, subscribe, do all those fun things, and holler at us. If you have any questions about racing, etc., you can find Nick on Twitter at NTAM, that's 2 M's, 1215. I'm at Looms Boldly on there. You can also holler at us via InTheMoneyPodcast.com and the contact page there that goes directly into my personal email. So anything you need, let us know. For now, though, going to thank you one more time, Nick Tamaro. Going to thank our sponsors at Naira/NairaBets. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatal. May you win all your photos!